and the solidarity and the support that we have that's going to get this over the finish line.
Yeah.
Molson Coors needs to know, you don't mess with Teamsters, you don't mess with the Texas Teamsters.
We have, you know, thousands of workers on the workroom floor who are working right next to a non-member every single day. And what we're going to be shooting for is really asking them to talk to those non-members they are working with.
I think sometimes unfairly, there are some old stigmas on how unions can be perceived.
Sure.
You know, aggressive or angry or, you know, stalwart, not willing to change or whatnot.
I want to make sure that when I'm gone from Mammoth Cave National Park, that the story doesn't go away again. It went away for a while, but I feel that I have opportunity to kind of bring them back.
The first time I got arrested was for Local 11. I got arrested when they were doing the housekeeper strike. I think it was the Wilshire Green. We got handcuffed to a truck in the middle of Wilshire Boulevard.
You're listening to the Labor Radio Podcast, weekly produced by the Labor Radio Podcast Network, laborradionetwork.org. I'm Chris Garlock. On today's show, a visit with striking Teamsters at Coors Molson in Fort Worth, Texas. American Postal Workers Union Organization Director Anna Smith talks about the union's 2024 organizing campaign. Jay Dock and Krause speak with Philly labor leaders. Park Ranger Jerry Bransford's connection to Mammoth Cave National Park goes back to his enslaved ancestors. And, in our final segment, Changing Lives, Changing LA, a play featuring rank-and-file members of Unite Here Local 11. This week's featured shows are Workers' Beat, which airs at 9 a.m. Saturday Central Time on KNON in Dallas, Texas, Communicating with You, the Member, the podcast from APWU, the American Postal Workers Union. The Labor Show, the radio voice of Philly's labor movement, airs every Saturday, 7 p.m. on WPHT 1210 a.m. America Works, an ongoing podcast series from the Library of Congress, featuring the voices of contemporary workers from throughout the United States. Rework Radio is a women-led radio show and podcast from the UCLA Labor Center that spotlights the voices of workers, immigrants, and people of color. That's all ahead on this week's edition of the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. Also, just a heads up that the Labor Radio Podcast Network will once again be covering the Labor Notes Conference coming up next month in Chicago, Illinois. A team of network members will provide daily reports featuring voices and news from the conference. If you're there, we'd love to meet you. And if not, we hope our reports will be the next best thing. By the way, we now have swag. That's right, the Labor Radio Podcast Network just launched our swag shop this week, and you can get your snazzy Labor Radio Podcast Network t-shirt there. Just hop on over to laborradionetwork.org, where you can order yours from our friends at Works Printing. Here's this week's show.
This is Gene Lance on the Workers Beat Extra.
Yeah, we're at the Teamsters Rally in Fort Worth, Texas, along with hundreds of other people. I rode over here with somebody from the post office, somebody from the airport, Transport Workers Union. Mostly Teamsters.
Sean Jr. and Joseph. Let's hear it for our general president.
This is the general president of the Teamsters, International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
Are we ready to fight?
Yeah!
I can't pick a better place to be today to celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah!
As a result of this, I will not be drinking a beer today.
Yeah!
Now listen, we have a great opportunity here. We have a great opportunity. We have the ability, once again, to take on corporate America.
Yes.
And thankfully, We have the support of the rank and file members nationwide to make certain we hold this white collar crime syndicate known as Molson Coors accountable and make certain they understand that they picked a fight with the wrong union. Now, I want to thank you personally. I want to thank your families for having the courage and conviction to take on this schoolyard bully. A schoolyard bully who doesn't respect the labor you provided them day in and day out. When Fred and I, who, by the way, our greatest General Secretary Treasurer, when Fred and I started looking at the history of what's been going on in this facility, the givebacks that you've all sacrificed, the shit contracts that you've had to work under. We made a determination several weeks ago before you went on strike while we were dealing with that other brewery who actually did the right thing at the end of the day by their employees, even though we had to put them in a headlock so they understood it. But we looked at where you were vulnerable. We look at our opponents. And we know where Molson Coors is vulnerable because we're going to have a nationwide boycott until they come to their senses.
Right on.
We're going to make certain that we hit every ounce of their vulnerabilities. Now, I grew up in Boston, and there was always conflict somewhere. You had conflict at the dinner table. You had conflict in your neighborhood. And you always look at your opponent, and you want to find where they're most vulnerable. And where they're most vulnerable is by us withholding our labor, by you standing strong, making certain that the public and the politicians have to spread the word and put the pressure on this company to do the right thing by the people that make them a success day in and day out. I got a message for Molson Coors. I got a message for anybody that doesn't support our strike. I got a message for anybody that wants to take on the greatest organization, 1.3 million strong nationwide, that when you fight with the Teamsters, put your helmets on, buckle your chin straps, it's a full contact sport. Thank you.
All right, let's hear it for the General President. Absolutely, General Secretary Treasurer. They're gonna get it done. They're gonna get it done. I want to thank everybody for coming today. It's the unity and the solidarity and the support that we have that's going to get this over the finish line.
Yeah!
Molson Coors needs to know, you don't mess with Teamsters, you don't mess with the Texas Teamsters. Let's go get them. Thank you. Be safe.
This is Gene Lance on the Workers' Beat Extra.
Greetings, APW family. This is President Mark Demerstein joining you again with our podcast, Communicating with the Members. I invited our organization director, Anna Smith, who does a wonderful job, to join us in this podcast today to talk about some plans we have to help build our power and leverage through organizing the non-members as we head into these negotiations. And as I said, we represent about 200,000 postal workers. We're about 80% organized. In many ways, that's darn good. But in many ways, it also shows that we got a lot of work to do and we can do it. Welcome to the podcast, Anna. Great to have you here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the level of organization generally. Of course, we are launching a organizing campaign as we lead up to opening day, and that'll start on April 1st, building more union power. So, Anna, why don't you share some of the details of the campaign, what we're trying to achieve, and then we'll talk about how to get there.
Absolutely. I am really excited about this campaign going on this year. You know, in our when we're talking organizing campaign, what we are talking about is about all of us, each of you out there as well, collectively working together to increase our worker power. we are getting ready to be heading into contract negotiations. And when we go to meet up against and go to fight against the Postal Service, we want to make sure that we have as much bargaining power as possible.
That's right.
And, you know, that's going to include getting every one of those non-members on our side, because as all of you know, if they are not standing with us, they are standing against us. And what does that mean? It means that every non-member who chooses to be a non-member, they are standing on the side of the Postal Service. So, you know, I think it's important that people understand that the bargaining power is going to be based upon how many of us are standing together.
Right. So what are some of the ideas we can share with the good listeners out there about how to make this campaign a success and some of the tools we have?
Well, you know, it's funny because I think a lot of our members or a lot of people out there might generally think that it's just the leaders who have to do the organizing. And it's not. It takes each one of us. It can't be just the leaders out there doing all the organizing, signing up the non-members. We have, you know, thousands of workers on the workroom floor who are working right next to a non-member every single day. And what we're going to be shooting for is really asking them to talk to those non-members they are working with. We're going to be sending out mailings to our members saying, hey, and we're going to make it easy for them. We'll give them a card that they can actually hand to that non-member and have them scan that card so that the person can actually join online right from their phone. The entire process actually only takes 2.5 minutes. I've walked people through this process on the phone.
2 minutes and 28 seconds. What are some of the ideas you could share about how to win over that non-member? Is it yelling and screaming? Is it trying to listen? Is it a combination of the two? Is it trying to identify maybe who they're most friendly with or who they go out and bowl with the Friday after work and talk to that good member about, hey, so-and-so, you may not realize that so-and-so that you bowl with every week is riding your back as a freeloader. And somebody may say, you're kidding me. Give me that form. How does it work best in your experience?
Well, I kind of got a laugh.
Of course, it might depend how long they've been a non-member or how short they've been a non-member.
I don't know that anyone's ever gotten anything by yelling and screaming or being aggressive, but I also feel that we need to make sure those non-members feel like they don't belong. I think that's the key, is they want to come in to work and they want to put their blinders on and pretend like they work in a non-union environment, that they'd, you know, just come in and do their job and they don't want to talk to anyone and try to get by and skim by with people thinking they're in the union. The biggest thing I think is trying to, you know, start out your conversation of letting them know that we want them to stand with us. And, you know, I try to get across to people, not necessarily asking someone to join, but asking them to stand with you. You know, it's much harder for someone to say, no, they are not going to stand with you, than it is for someone to say, no, they are not going to join.
Yeah, and with a contract coming up, that's a very compelling message, because we're going to have to stand together if we want the kind of results that postal workers have earned and deserve. So be well, be strong. We'll talk to you next time.
You can download the podcast on all streaming services, including YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts regularly.
And welcome in, everyone, to another edition of The Labor Show with J. Doc and Krause. We thank everyone, of course, for joining in and being a part of what should be another spectacular show, J. Doc.
Katie, back this up. You're going to be singing the national anthem for us?
What?
Uh-oh. Right.
Now, you're going to check in out on us? If you would, a little bit about, you know, the organization and what you do.
Sure. So I've been with the Architectural Glass and Metal Association for 10 years this year.
Why does she get to do the shorter one and I had to announce the whole one?
Yeah, no. So Architectural Glass and Metal Association, AGMA, represents signatory glazing contractors in the Philadelphia 5-county region, Southern Jersey all the way out to Atlantic City, the entire state of Delaware, and the Eastern Shore of Maryland. So the territory that is District Council 21. And what I do for them is put on educational events, help fulfill their every need. I stand right behind them. I'm not part of the bidding process, but I know it's a very stressful and complicated process for them. So whatever I can do to help them research market share or help them with their websites or whatever they might need, certainly facilitate the relationship with District Council 21, with the Glazers Union in particular. That's what I will do for AGMA. And then just recently, I took on the role of Executive Director as the Associated Master Painters and Decorators of Philadelphia. So that territory is a little bit smaller. It's the Philadelphia five-county region, but that is very similar roles and responsibilities for the commercial painters. I'm really excited. I just started in January, but again, it's very similar in supporting management and helping them with whatever they might need, but also really helping with that labor management portion and making sure that any needs, wants, desires, even potential conflicts are talked about before they escalate.
What is the difference coming from politics into labor? There's a great synergy there, and labor, obviously, collective bargaining, paycheck protection, the ability to exist, that is contingent upon our political relationships and making sure that we support those who support us. But in your world, what's the difference between politics, existing in that world, and labor?
So for politics, I myself personally was always far more interested in the policy side. And a lot of times those two things get conflated, the legislative and the political, and they're actually quite different. It's always different staffs. It's kept completely separate. So I always craved something that was far more policy based. But politics was where I was working at the time. And so I, coming from there into the labor world, it felt so much more, there's a certain satisfaction you get from working in politics. You know, you're working towards a race at the end of the year, you win or lose, and it's exciting. But with this, you're slowly building up to just make an existing industry better as best you can. And so for me, coming into this is far more of a community. I think we kind of know politics is quite cutthroat. And so this is very much like a community that I feel like everyone should want to be a part of. It's very welcoming, and it's very nice to know that everyone is working towards a common goal. And we may disagree, on various things and the different trades and the different, we're all representing different interests, but at the same time, we're all working towards the same goal. And that's very meaningful to be able to be part of such a robust and powerful community that has so much influence. And the ultimate goal within the community is advocating for the worker, which is you can't get any better than that.
I think sometimes unfairly, there are some old stigmas on how unions can be perceived.
Sure.
Aggressive or angry or, stalwart, willing to change or whatnot.
Well, there are misnomers that we're a bunch of thugs, right?
Correct. So when you actually go and you go together in concert with the union and you represent management, so again, we're all about winning the jobs and the union is all about staffing the jobs, but we don't work without each other. We're not working. And then you go to the legislators and you talk about it and you talk about issues and you have the union support on prompt payment or something, an issue that affects management, but there's labor standing next to you supporting you, or vice versa. When we're management and we're standing next to, misclassification of workers is a huge problem.
Oh, yeah.
I think that, with a background in legislative ideas and history and whatnot, that can help. That can help because we can, Katie and I can just kind of sit there and say, yeah, we've been in the shoes. This might be how we want to approach the legislators.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Labor Show with J. Doc and Krause. Don't forget, coming up next week, our Hall of Fame Legends of Labor induction for Mike Farah. On behalf of my partner J-Doc, on behalf of all of our participants in the program today and all of our listeners, I'm Joe Krause. See you next time, everybody.
Welcome to America Works. interviews with contemporary American workers throughout the United States, collected by the library's American Folklife Center as part of its Occupational Folklife Project. This is AFC staff folklorist Nancy Gross, and this America Works episode features excerpts from a longer interview with Jerry Bransford, a seasonal tour guide at Kentucky's Mammoth Cave National Park. The world's longest cave system, Mammoth Cave has been a tourist attraction since soon after the region was settled by Europeans in the late 18th century. Members of Mr. Bransford's family began working as cave guides in the 1830s. Like many of the early guides, they were African Americans, and through their knowledge of the cave, they became local, national, and even international celebrities despite being enslaved. Generations of Bransfords continued to guide tourists through Mammoth Cave after they achieved freedom in 1865. Jerry's ancestor, Will Bransford, even represented Mammoth at the 1893 Chicago World's Fair. But the family's multi-generational relationship with the cave was abruptly severed in 1941, when the cave became a U.S. national park, and in the ensuing reorganization, all African-American workers were dismissed. As Mr. Bransford explained to folklorist Brent Bjorkman during this interview for the Occupational Folklife Project documenting ranger lore, he started working as a guide after retiring from a successful corporate career because he felt it was his duty to come back to Mammoth to make sure park visitors learned about the important contributions his family and other African-American cave workers made in the exploration and development of this celebrated natural wonder.
I am Jerry Bransford, and I'm a seasonal tour guide for Mammoth Cave National Park. Well, my connection to the park goes back in the 1830s at Thomas Bransford of Nashville. I didn't know the entire story, but I knew three generations of Bransfords, even as a young kid, per my daddy, uncle, and aunts and kinfolk. But well, I found out there was actually a generation and a half more Bransfords than I really knew about. Well, I actually started tour guiding in 2004, and I had already been invited to Mammoth Cave National Park for History Month that I would do a presentation there in the auditorium. And that really developed my interest and being fascinated with my family's story, I realized that there was even more than I knew about it, and I was really motivated to tell everybody of kind of what I know and some things that happened to my ancestors. Some things were happy, and then as time went on, I realized some things were quite sad and disastrous, but it's all the American story, and I wanted to make sure that I did the best job that I could to let the world know what happened down there, beginning in 1838 until 1941. We got a wide range of tours. The historic tour is probably, and the discovery tour is probably a great opportunity for me to talk about these slave ancestors and the saltpeter vats and black men and their contribution to the cave. We all do all the tours, but the historic tours actually allows me to walk in the footsteps of ancestors that were there over 101 years before I ever came there. Mm-hmm. I see their names and dates along the route, probably at least five along the historic route. And my second cousin, he was a part of the exploring team that found Cathedral Dome in 1906. I think the things I would really want to do is to let everybody know that Mammoth Cave is a wonderful cave system, internationally renowned. But I want to let people know that people, men and women of color, had a vital role in the success of that in earlier days. I want to make sure that when I'm gone from Mammoth Cave National Park, that the story doesn't go away again. It went away for a while, but I feel that I have opportunity to kind of bring them back, the Bransfords back, hopefully tell in a true, documented, and tasteful way the whole story. The story of slavery. The story of them having happy days escorting kings and queens to the cave. I don't feel my appointment there at Mammoth Cave is just by chance. I really believe that I was meant to be here for a while. At the time that it became a national park, with a lot of Bransfords was there, and if they could hear me, and if they could know what I'm trying to do, I just would say to them, I'm doing the best I can in your behalf. I only get to tell the story because of what your accomplishments were. So I hope that my appointment there and the way I tell the story would please you. I wish I could say that to my daddy. My daddy never got to see me come to Mammoth Cave. He died a year before I got in there. So I'd say, fellas, all you Bransford guides, at one time there were nine of you on the roster. I want you to know I'm doing the best I can for you. Hope to pick up the torch for a little while.
This is staff folklorist Nancy Gross. On behalf of the American Folklife Center, and with special thanks to AFC intern Joseph Z. Johnson for his help with this episode, thank you for listening to America Works.
Our final segment today is from Rework Radio, a woman-led radio show and podcast from the UCLA Labor Center, spotlighting the voices of workers, immigrants, and people of color.
Hi everyone, this is Vina. Today we're doing something a little different. We're sharing a play called Changing Lives, Changing LA. It was created from transcripts from the Unite Here Local 11 Oral History Project and was originally performed before a live audience at Loyola Marymount University and UCLA. You're going to hear from four members of Unite Here Local 11, who are voiced by professional actors: Emma Worthington, Ignacio Ruiz, Regla Soto, and Soledad Garcia, share their stories of becoming leaders in their union and fighting for a better life while helping transform Los Angeles. We open with Emma.
The first time I got arrested was for Local 11. I got arrested when they were doing the housekeeper strike. I think it was the Wilshire Grand. We got handcuffed to a truck in the middle of Wilshire Boulevard. That was my first arrest. Well, after that, I was hooked. In doing demonstrations, that is. You have to learn to stand up and fight for yourself, but you can't do it by yourself. It has to be a group effort.
My name is Ignacio Ruiz. I grew up over in Mexico in the state of Michoacán. When I was 7 years old, already I was working in the field with one of my uncles. I was performing the same job as a grown-up person, but he was paying me different wages because of my age. So I went over and talked to my uncle, and I say, "You're paying these workers 10 pesos, and I'm getting 5 pesos for the same work, performing the same duties that they do. Why is it that I'm not getting paid the same?" He didn't agree on paying me the same wages. So I say, "Okay, I'm not working any longer with you." And I went over and tell my father, "You know what? I don't think this is fair." So I left. Then after 2 weeks or so, my uncle calls me back and says, "Okay, I'm going to pay you the same as the others." So I went back. I delegated my uncle when I was 7, and I got it. So ever since, I know that if you stand up, you get what you deserve.
To watch a video recording of the play, please visit tinyurl.com/changinglives changingLA. The video recording was edited by Robert Hillig. And lastly, thanks to all the individuals and organizations who made this episode possible. Please check out our show notes for a full list of credits. Thanks for listening. Until next time, rethink, rework.
Hey, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, just a tiny sample of the amazing programs aired over the last week on more than 200 labor radio and podcast shows. They're all part of the Labor Radio Podcast Network, shows that focus on working people's issues and concerns. We've got links to all the network shows at laborradionetwork.org. You can also find them, use the hashtag LaborRadioPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And now you can be part of the Labor Radio Podcast Network family. Get your snazzy Labor Radio Podcast Network t-shirt just released this week. Hop on over to laborradionetwork.org where you can order yours from our friends at Works Printing. Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, edited this week by Patrick Dixon. I produce the show, and our social media guru, as always, is Mr. Harold Phillips. for the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. This is Chris Garlock urging you to stay active and, of course, stay tuned to your local Labor Radio podcast show.